From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2005, which happens to be the last time a Republican ran for mayor of the city of Rochester. That Republican was attorney John Perinello, and 12 years later, the GOP once again has a voice in the race for Rochester's top job. This time around, the candidate is a county legislator, Tony Michiquet. He's got some strong opinions on how the city is currently being managed and what he would like to do at City Hall. He says he's really the embodiment of the American dream, given his struggle, and that none of the other candidates can match his experience when it comes to both struggle and then success. So let's welcome into the program, and we have a lot to talk about, County Legislator Tony Michiquet. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, Evans. Hi, everyone. How you doing?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Thanks for taking the time to come in. And let's start with that. You're the embodiment of the American dream, which kind of goes back to your childhood, right? I mean, that's kind of why you say that. Take us back there, if you could.
It does. I was born to a very poor family. My parents split up when I was a young child. I went through three foster homes. From there, at 13, they forced me to live with my mom for about 6 months. And my own family took things from me, and I felt, well, I can go out in the streets and get robbed. So I went out on my own at 13. I slept in my friend's car for about 2-3 months. Then I landed a job at the LDR char pit. I did 40 hours a week. I painted houses. I did whatever I had to, and I paid rent at 14 and put myself through high school. Luckily for me, you know, I believe God gives you good people when you truly need them, and the Palumbo family was one of those families. They taught me all about business. They basically took me under their wing, and I graduated from Shalott in 1976. 3 months later, after I graduated, I landed a job at General Motors, and I spent 25 years in GM. I retired out of there at 43. I was actually downsized, but because of my investments in property, I was able to not have to go right back to work. And all that experience, I hate to see it go to waste, because I don't see any of the candidates today who have 25 years in manufacturing who have been a union member for 41 years, and I want to bring some of those skills to City Hall and try to bring jobs back here, because when you see Kodak with 70, 80,000 jobs gone, we used to have 5 or 6 new car dealerships on Lake Avenue. They're all gone. Why are people leaving the city? Why are they leaving the state? It's because of the high regulations, the high taxes, and an environment that's not conducive to business. So I think I can really make a contribution to this city and help our people.
I want to go back to your childhood. You said your own family was taking from you, and you felt like you could get robbed on the street, so why not get away from them? Is that kind of what you were saying there?
That is correct.
They were stealing from you?
Yes. You know, I had been working since really 7, 8 years old, delivering paper, shoveling snow, cutting grass. I even painted houses and did roofing at 10, 11 years old. Thank God to my foster father. My foster father was a drill sergeant, literally, and was a master sergeant under Patton in the Third Army. So how much do you think I got away with, you know? But that was exactly what I needed at that age, and he taught me so much. And a quick little story. I was on my way to go play baseball. I'm 10 years old, and I'm carrying my bat and ball, and my foster father's on the roof of the house. He's getting ready to do some roofing. And he asked me, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to play baseball. He goes, no, you're not. If you're part of the family, you're part of the team. Get your butt up here. And that's how I learned to do roofing. He taught me two things that have stuck with me all my life. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Someone's got to pay for it somewhere along the line. And there's no such thing as I can't. And I've lived my life that way. There's no such thing as I can't. I fly World War II aircraft. I've driven across the country numerous times. I've been a guest of the Navy on the USS Ronald Reagan on its maiden deployment for 7 days from Pearl Harbor to San Diego. I've been all over the place. I've raced motorcycles. There's so many things that I've done. I've rehabbed probably 23, 24 houses. And each, you know, thing was a new adventure, and everybody, there was always people that would say, you can't do it, you can't win, you can't make this happen. Don't believe them. You got to believe in yourself, and you got to believe that you did the hard work, the studying, the research to come up with good ideas for a good business plan and make it happen.
Do you get the feeling that Democratic administrations and Democratic lawmakers are leading, especially young people, away from that can-do attitude that you had?
I'm afraid so. I mean, let's take city government. Democrats have been in control for 45 years. They can't blame anybody for this failed policies. When you see that poverty is increasing, and yet the mayor said, well, we created 30,000 jobs, not even the DNC believed that. You know, you got to tell the truth. And all of us will make a mistake now and then. Just own up to it. People are usually very forgiving. I'll give you another one where, you know, she said that we're at a 30-year low in crime. I find that hard to believe, and I can't find one person, and I'm all over the city. I ask everybody at every meeting, raise your hand if you believe we're at a 30-year low in crime. Never get it. How can you be at a 30-year low in crime when the top 50 cities, top 50, had a 17% increase in murder? Our city, murder is up, rapes is up, and robberies are up. So it must be the new math they're using.
Well, and from your website, the opening message on your website includes the following, quote, are you tired of Rochester being the murder capital of New York State? This city is in trouble.
Per capita.
Okay. So if we're the murder capital of New York State and the city is in trouble, I mean, are you talking to people who are scared to leave their homes, to be in their neighborhoods? Are you scared of spots?
I'm not afraid because, first of all, you don't put yourself in harm's way. You don't go into a rough area at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's kind of dumb. Second of all, you know, I have other ways of defending myself, where I won't go into detail, but...
Wait, what?
Well, I'm a license holder.
And, oh, okay, I get
right.
You. Okay.
So, I mean, it's not that I ever want to use anything like that.
Okay.
But I do have some capability. And we all have cell phones. We can all call 911 very quickly. I'm also a director of 911. You know, I just, I'm not afraid, but I don't put myself in harm's way needlessly.
Well, and so I wonder if there's a difference between what you're saying, though, especially as someone who has grown up here, has experienced a lot of struggle yourself, is familiar with that kind of struggle, and what we heard that kind of caused an uproar. Because I think this perception and reality, I think it's important to get it right, and I want to get your thoughts on this.
Sure.
I know your colleague in the GOP, and you don't work with him on the same level, but Joe Arrigo ran for assembly and won this past fall. And on this program, he talked about where he grew up, which was Carter Street, which is not in your district,
No, it is not.
It's in the northeast of the city. But you're familiar with Carter Street, I assume.
I am.
Okay, and this is what Joe Arrigo said about Carter Street now. Let's listen to that.
Where I lived... I wouldn't go down there in an armored car, right? Because that's how dangerous it is.
Wouldn't go down there in an armored car. I said, well, I'll take you down there, Joe. It's not that, you know, and he said, well, you better have, you know, bulletproof windows. And he was not kidding. And he was basically saying any time of the day. Is that over the top?
I would say so.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, yes, our crime is up. But that was way over the line. And I'm sure he regrets saying it that way.
Are you sure?
I know. I would never say that.
Okay.
Because I'm over in that area, too. You know, so I don't have any problem with it.
Well, in this country, there's this ongoing conversation about police-community relations. If you're the mayor of Rochester, you know, you're going to need a good relationship with police. You're going to need a good relationship with the various neighborhoods across Rochester. And you're going to have to work across groups that have very different opinions on this. So let me start with a basic sort of premise on this. What do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement?
I think they might have had a point at one time. I'm not very keen on the violence. I don't think
on the violence.
Oh, you know, like when they're calling for, you know, what do we want? Dead cops now, that kind of thing. I don't think that gets anybody.
But you don't
anywhere.
Think most people in Black Lives Matter are calling for dead
cops?
Oh
no, but the groups, the people that do say that, it taints the rest of the group, and it shouldn't. They shouldn't say anything like that. The last thing we need is more violence. So I would keep an open mind and always listen to all people. But as far as that goes, we need to tamp down the rhetoric. in the violence and try to communicate with each other and try to understand each other. I think that's always the best option.
The Black Lives Matter movement operates from a perspective that says right now in this country, people of color are treated differently by law enforcement. Do you believe people of color in Rochester are treated differently by law enforcement here?
You may have a few cases like that, but for most of the officers I know, and I sit on law enforcement council, I'm chair for public safety. I know most of the police chiefs in the towns and in the RPD, and they just want to serve their community. They want to help people. They want to keep people safe. It's their city too. So, you know, again, there's bad people that don't measure up in every profession, whether it's a dentist, a doctor, an architect, and maybe even a police officer. But it's not the overall majority. I don't see that.
Okay. And so why do you think the movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, does have that perspective?
They're probably looking at it, like what happened in Ferguson or New York City. But again, I'm going to say that if those incidents happened, and I'm sure some do, it's not the whole police force. You can't paint a whole broad brush approach on something like that.
All right, so you think they're kind of blowing those incidents out of proportion then?
I don't think it's an accurate assessment.
Okay. And they've talked a lot about white privilege. Do you believe in white privilege?
I was called and told I had white privilege. And I said, well, wait a minute. Do you know anything about me? Well, no. Well, how do you know I've had white privilege? Well, because you're white. I says, so you make an assessment on me, but just by looking at my skin color, isn't that racist in itself? And they thought about it for a minute and it says, well, yeah. I said, well, let me tell you a little bit about me, which I did. I gave him my personal story. And he said, well, maybe you don't have white privilege. I said, well, there's a lot of people that have worked hard and struggled. I wouldn't throw that term around so quickly.
Okay. But what if there was someone who had exactly your life story but was a person of color, and now they've built a successful life that you have, but the difference is when Tony Michiquet walks down the street, people say, hey, how's it going, Tony? And when a person of color walks down the street, they may be more likely still to be stopped by police, or they may be viewed differently. You know, isn't that an example of how you might have come from tough circumstances, but privilege is sort of the sliding scale, isn't it?
Well, I think everybody should have equal rights, period. Thomas Jefferson said it best, equal rights for all, special privileges for none. And I actually have that in something I call a policy of excellence. I think one of the mayor's biggest jobs is to bring people together in unity. And you can't have it when one group is pointing the finger at the other and saying, you've got white privilege. And the other group is saying, well, you've got affirmative action. And you got special privileges here or there. Stop it. This city is losing. We need to come together as a team. Black, white, gay, straight, male, female, I don't care. Let's make it equal. You know, everybody has a fair shot. It's just the way I think of it. That's all.
Okay.
Everybody should be equal and fair.
And so if you're going to be the next mayor, then what's your website? And by the way, if people want to check out Tony's website online, where can they find more on what you're doing?
TonyForMayor.org. And I welcome your comments. By all means, if you think you got a better idea, I'm all ears. I hate to say it, but many candidates throw out the focus-tested words, transparency, shovel-ready, collaborative, but they didn't put out any specifics. I put out 49 specifics that I feel have to be done to save this city.
It's among the most specific in terms of policy and actual ideas that I have seen for any candidate.
And I'm not being politically correct. I'm putting it out there. I'm telling the God's honest truth. I think we need accurate and honest assessment of problems and not worry about the politics of it first, and then we can fix them. You can't fix something you don't properly ID.
Tony has had very specific ideas on schools, on the economy, poverty, and jobs. We're going to be getting into those. Let me grab our first phone call. It's Bruce in Irondequoit. I'm with Tony Michiquet, who's running for mayor of Rochester. Go ahead, Bruce.
I know this is a local race, but when you make a choice in regards to party, it flows up towards the national aspect. And I would like to ask you, as a Republican, what you would do to reform your party that has constantly tried to reduce minority voting through picture ID laws, attacked women's rights, attacked gay and lesbian rights. So say you become a mayor, even as a voter or a local, you're already voted into an office. What have you done and what will you done to try and bring your party back to the center?
First of all, how you doing, Bruce? Nice. I'm glad you called.
Lovely. Thank you.
I'm concentrated on fixing the problems of the city. You know, my party, first of all, I don't think parties matter as much as they used to, by far. I think more people are looking at the person, not just the party. They're not looking at race or sex. They're looking at what does this person put on the table? Is it a good...
I don't think that the path of voting really bear that out. That people are going across lines and like that. It's
well,
really not.
Well, if I may, I will tell you that in 2011, my district is only 23% Republican, and yet I won with 52%. And that's because a lot of Democrats voted for me because I put out common sense from a common man. Same thing in 2015. Everybody said I was dead in the water. You can't win. They're running a minority woman against you. You might as well not even run, et cetera, et cetera. And thank God I won 56-43. So there's a lot of Democrats. There's a lot of even working family people voted for me. So, you know, I'm going by my personal experience. On a national level, that may be a different story. But people seem to like me when I campaign.
Well, and right now, there's an interesting sort of a national story going on where, you know, our president, who is a Republican, kind of ran against kind of a counter-establishment Republican. It's fair to say. Would you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And so it's interesting to see this dynamic of him working with the Republican Congress. Are you more of a sort of a GOP Congress, a Paul Ryan Republican, or a Donald Trump Republican, Tony?
I look at myself first as an American. Second, it would be that the party affiliation. I'm more center, maybe right of center when it comes to fiscal responsibility. But when it comes to social issues, I'm probably even more liberal there. I mean, I really don't care what someone does in their own home, long as no one's getting hurt. You know, if someone wants to be gay, that's fine. What do I care? You know, I'm looking at it.
I mean, most people don't decide they want to be gay or not.
Oh, whatever it is.
But I understand what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. I'm not. Maybe I didn't word that correctly. But, you know, a gay person is a citizen of the United States.
That does,
they get all the rights as everybody else. I don't see why there has to be so much distinction.
You sound more libertarian on social issues.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm fiscally conservative. I don't like to see our tax money wasted and like it has been, like in our schools or in other issues. But, you know, when it comes to people's rights and when it comes to what people want to do with their life, God bless you.
What about on drug policy? Right now, the city of Rochester is dealing with what a lot of places in this country are dealing with when it comes to heroin, when it comes to opioid abuse. And, you know, I mean, the libertarian perspective may say, hey, live and let live, you know, even the hardest drugs, you know, that's a medical issue. It shouldn't be a criminal issue. How do you view the heroin issue in Rochester and where do you stand on drugs?
Well, I was at a NYSAC convention, which is a New York State Association of Counties. And this is one of the things we went over. And it's almost like 100% increase on the people dying from heroin. Not only that, it wrecks families, it wrecks lives. It's a huge cost to taxpayers on policing and the EMTs. And, I mean, God bless the police, the EMTs, and the firemen that are actually out there saving some of these people from overdosing. You know, I'm going to have to draw the line if indirectly it facilitates criminal activity, which causes even more crime. So, you know, if someone wants to smoke marijuana in their home, I don't care. It's not a big deal to me. But I did realize that Governor Hickenlooper in Denver, when he helped push this through, car accidents skyrocketed in Colorado. So they can't have that either. So, I mean, there is sometimes unintended consequences. So I would be more cautious in that review.
Okay. And we're going to be talking economic policy. Let me grab one more quick phone call because we've had a few waiting to jump in. Benjamin is in Victor. You're on with Tony Michiquet. Go ahead, Benjamin.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a quick comment for Tony. When you said that a comment about white privilege, I just wanted to make a quick little word of advice. I'm a white male, and I think that white privilege means that we don't really have the inherent bias against us that has kind of blocked the black community from making it upward and, you know, in society. Sorry, I'm a little nervous, so it's hard for me to...
That's okay. Take your time.
That's fine.
But so I guess as a white person, I haven't had to live with that fear of being judged by what's being viewed as sort of the oppressive race. You know, the white people, we've done a lot over the course of history to kind of push them down. And I think that to say that there isn't white privilege is very naive. I mean, it's easy to say that that's racist towards us, but I don't think that that's the right way to look at it. Really, we've been dealt a great hand, and I think it's time to just see it from their perspective and be more sensitive. That's all I have to say.
And Benjamin, let me just ask you before I give Tony a chance to respond. He shared his own story, of struggle, growing up in the foster system, learning values from, in one case, a foster parent, but also his struggle of trying to make it, pay his way through school, graduate high school. And so I think what I'm hearing from Tony is just that sometimes when we say white privilege, we kind of do a one-size-fits-all, that all white people have the exact same level of privilege, and that Tony finds that a little bit divisive. I mean, do you agree that not all white people would have the same level of privilege?
No, I think it's definitely, it's a more specific thing that is a one-two kind of fits-all. Like, you may have had a hard life as a white guy, but it's a totally different thing. It's just, it's definitely a racial issue, how we view each other. Like I said, it's like those snap judgments that we've talked about, just recognizing that, oh, a lot of people might not be racist, we might be tolerant, but there is this thing, even I have it sometimes, I notice my inherent bias, and I think it plays a lot into this view of white privilege.
All right, Benjamin, hang there for a second. Yeah, hang there for a second, let's let Tony respond. Go ahead, Tony.
Thanks for calling in, Ben. This is why I developed the policy of excellence. If you make it fair for everyone across the board, the fair equal access to all opportunities, you don't hold anybody back, you don't make preconditioned judgments, I think that will go a long way to eliminating any kind of discrimination at all. And let me go back to the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which is the Equal Protection Clause. That means everybody should be equal. So if you can enforce that through a government policy, then I think some of the disagreements or name-calling will kind of subside, and we can focus on going back and bringing jobs back to this city. We could focus on rebuilding our neighborhoods. I advocate for going back to neighborhood schools and neighborhood police precincts, and that is so we can rebuild the neighborhood as a hub, and all the hubs together will create the city. And all I'm trying to do is make people's lives better. I don't have to run for mayor. I retired a long time ago. I want to do this because I'm tired of seeing my city at odds with each other, name calling, no jobs, schools are bad, people aren't safe in the street. That's why I'm running. If this is just one little policy, you can look on tonyformmayor.org and let me know what you think.
All right. Benjamin, real quick follow-up if you want one. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's honestly, if you look at it, I think we live in a black city and I think the suburbs are white. And I think honestly, if you take more advice from the black community and represent them more to improve their lives, that would be great. I think you sound a lot like a politician. And if you just be a straight shooter and answer the questions as they are. Don't be afraid of what the police force is going to think of you. That would be great. You know, you're just running around doing the gambit, and that's all I got
to
say.
All right, Benjamin, thank you. Baked into his comment there, Tony, is an implication that you're not talking to the quote-unquote black community. Do you meet routinely with people of color to hear their experiences?
Absolutely. Pastor Willie Davis is a personal friend of mine. We converse. My fellow legislators, Legislator Willie Lightfoot, who's now running for city council, very good man. I've had many conversations with him. I can go on and on. David Gantt, I've talked to him many times. I don't look at color. I don't look at party. I look at who is the best person, who's got some good ideas that will help.
But you see race, right? I mean, it's not.
Of course.
You're not someone who says, like, I don't even see race.
Of course.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. I hope that when they look at my race, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha. Okay. One more subject on this. One more call on the subject, and then what I want to do is spend the second half hour. I want Tony to kind of run down his specific policies. He's got a lot to say on jobs, the economy, why the poverty level is where it is, and what he would do as mayor to change that. We're going to be waiting through that. But let me get one more quick call in here. This is Alice in Rochester. Go ahead, Alice.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Alice.
So you talk about wanting to make sure that we are all treated equally under the law and that we are all equally protected. But don't you think that there is a deeper conversation that needs to happen? I think that we need to train police better on handling relations with people, and we need to address white privilege. I don't believe that that is name-calling. I think that it is recognizing that there is a disparity between how each race is treated by police officers. The point is, it doesn't matter how you grew up. If you are a white person walking down the street, you are not afraid for your life when you see a police car.
As far as the training goes, I'm chair for public safety for the County Ledge, and numerous resolutions and grants come through constantly training our deputy sheriffs. And I would assume the RPD gets the same thing through city council. You can always improve something, of course, but what I'm trying to say is maybe it's not as big now with the reach outs, with the different groups, with the training. I mean, people are trying. Are you going to correct everybody? No. But I think overall majority are good people just trying to do their job, trying to keep people safe. And you know, everybody has different perspectives. That's fine. That's what makes America great. But for the most part, I see a lot of good people.
Talking to Tony Michike, who is a Republican running for mayor of Rochester, and he says he knows he has an uphill battle, especially with voter registration numbers, but he has won uphill battles before, and he's a county legislator, first elected in 2011, reelected in 2015, and now wants the top job in the city of Rochester. We haven't had a Republican on the ballot since 2005. That was John Perinella, but Tony wants to be there and wants to be your next mayor, and when we come back after our only break of the hour, let's talk about his specific policy ideas on job creation, how government can either help with that or get out of the way. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about poverty and a lot more with Tony Michike. You can learn more, tonyformayor.org. Is that correct? .org. Tonyformayor.org to learn a lot more. We're right back. Coming up in our second hour, if you're into American exceptionalism, this is maybe not the category for you because we are number 7. The United States not anywhere close to number 1 in the world when it comes to literacy rates. We lag way behind countries like Finland. Why is that? How do we get more kids reading? Well, it's Children's Book Week, and we're going to be talking about how to get more kids reading and what they should be reading next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. A lot more to talk about, and we're not going to get through everything, so I might as well tell you again. It's tonyformayor.org to read 49 different proposals and ideas from Tony Michike on improving the city of Rochester. Let's talk schools here. You are very tough on your website, on the state of schools, on where Rochester ranks. And one of the reasons is, as you say, you can't teach who doesn't show up. You've got very tough ideas on truancy. On your website, you say you want to make sure that parents are held accountable for kids who don't show up. You say, quote, we would have a truancy officer for each quadrant of the city. You can't teach a child who's not there. If parents consistently fail to send their children to school, they should be charged with child neglect. Parents must be responsible, and if so, charged, made to go to parenting classes. I call this the Give Kids a Chance program, end quote. Tell me more about this.
Well, I've been a landlord and a property owner for 26, 27 years, and when you're able to look at families when they don't think you're looking, and you listen to what their priorities are in life, how they handle themselves, what they teach their children, you see some of the worst, and you see hopefully some best, too. I've seen so many parents that stay in bed till 11, 12 o'clock. They don't get their kids up. And I actually did a truancy blitz with Dr. Vargas. I went to 16 houses. They had people in there. They would not answer the door, 15 out of 16. You're stealing that education from that child. That means you're also keeping them from getting the job skills that they need in order to compete in the job market or to go to college and to contribute back as a good citizen of society. This is a time to get tough. When you are the worst school district in the entire state, number 432 out of 432, you're the second worst in the country behind Detroit. I'm sorry, it's time to get tough. Someone's got to take command, and someone's got to really put out some good policy. And one of the ways I'm thinking about doing it is something what I refer to as putting MO, maintenance of effort, which is $119 million, in escrow. And the reason why is if you're not going to deliver, then I'm not going to pay for services not rendered. The taxpayer should not have to pay for failure. The administration is over-administrated, not enough teachers. And bear in mind that the mayor has no say in how this money is spent.
So how are you going to put the money in escrow? Are you allowed to do that?
Well, it's mandated by the state of New York that I pay, but is not mandated that I have to pay when they're not graduating enough kids. 45% graduation rate for kids, 9% graduation for black males. I'm sorry, that's not acceptable. If you contracted someone to put a roof on your house and they only put 45% of that roof on your house, and of the 45%, it was still leaking, would you pay the full amount? I know I wouldn't. So why is this different? It's time to go after an administration, and I'm speaking of Rochester City School District, that has utterly failed. We can't let our kids not have the tools to win again. We're losing 55% of those kids. I'm not going to accept that. No way.
Okay. And so when you say you put that money in escrow, if they're not graduating enough kids, there's not a legal standard for what enough is.
No,
what is enough?
But I put the standard at 65%. They need to get to 65% before I would release that money in escrow. And even then, I'm still losing one third, but it beats the heck out of 45%. And of the 45%, bear in mind, I'm told that only 3 or 4% of those kids could actually do college 101 work. They have to go to remedial school in RIT, MCC, wherever, to get caught up so they can do the college work. It's failing. It's failing across the board. I was just recently told that East High School had a graduation rate of 33%. You're losing two-thirds of those kids? I'm sorry. Someone's got to put their foot down, not only for the taxpayer, but for the parents and for those kids. I just don't see how you're going to attract business here when you have a workforce that is lacking the education and tools.
Okay, and I will say to our staff, and maybe Megan Mack, producer, can help me find a site on this. I've heard anywhere from 8, 9, 10% of black males graduating before. I think on this program in recent months, we had a group come in just helping us see I think it's in the 20s now. I don't know, but I don't have it offhand. My point is, where is that number coming from?
It's research I had done previously.
Okay.
But let's go with your number, 20%.
Yeah. No, I'm not at all saying that is what everyone should be celebrating. I just don't know that it's as low as 9%. But anyway, the point is you're saying it's got to be much better. But let me also try to play the role of the school district.
Tony. Evan, let me ask you one question.
Yeah.
Do you see any other candidate standing up for the families and for those kids?
Well,
no.
Your policies are very different than the other candidates.
No doubt.
They would say, I think, that your policies could hurt those families in this way. They say, take your benchmark, 65%. You got to graduate 65%. Otherwise, that $100 million plus, 119 or something, gets held in escrow, right? What they would say is, that first year, there's no way you're getting to 65%. Let's say it goes up to 49%. Let's say it goes to 53%. You take that money away, that makes it even harder to get the graduation rate up, and it will never get above. So what happens when you take that money away?
My proposal forces the Rochester City School District to deal with 40 years of failure of their policies, the cost structure to taxpayers, and the inept administration. I don't want to be in charge of schools. I don't want mayoral control. But I can't pay for failure. That money belongs to the people. The kids, I view those kids as my kids, and I wouldn't let my kid fail like that. I don't think the parents want their kids to fail either, and I don't think the citizens of the city wanted the kids to fail. Someone's got to be tough. And so I decided it's going to be me.
Okay, and when it comes to truancy, I also haven't asked the district if they agree with the idea that, you know, the majority of kids who are not showing up for school have parents who are essentially sleeping in late, not getting up for the day, not caring about where they are. You really believe that that's most of the cases? Parents are just not really caring?
Well, I'm telling you, over a quarter century of watching families grow up in many houses, and I won't say that's every case, of course, but I will tell you that I'm told that it's about 30% truancy rate. Where are our truancy officers? We don't have any. I'm sorry, that's not acceptable.
You create them? You create?
I not only would create them, but by putting the police precincts in Shalott High School, East High School, the Old West, and Franklin, that creates a hub. And if we went back to neighborhood schools, then that helps create the hub even bigger. They'll start building relationships with the officers. The officers build relationship with the people and the kids as they grow up. There would be less discrimination, less, as the gentleman said, that like white privilege. You would be realizing that we're all one family. We're all a team. We got to come together. We got to stop, you know, fighting with each other. And also, let me point out something. We have spent over $3 billion on busing. People talk about the environment. How much pollution do you think we put in the air? Just this city, they'll do $3 billion worth of busing and have the worst school district to thank for it. Again, someone's got to get tough. General Motors had 14 levels of hierarchy. Toyota had three. Who was more successful? The three. So let's get down to teaching our kids and not have all these administrative jobs. The comptroller just a couple of weeks ago said that the Rochester City School District couldn't do 97% of its own paperwork. This isn't me. This is a Democrat comptroller who's saying it. So I'm saying it's time to put your foot down. It's time to set some benchmarks and get some things done. If you want jobs to come here, you have to have a skilled workforce. And right now, I think it's sometimes lacking. Okay. Not always, but sometimes.
All right, let me, on the subject of again, Tony's wanting to get tougher on a number of issues, you've talked about drug and DNA testing, and let's grab Tate in Rochester, who has a question about that. I think heard something about that. Go ahead, Tate.
Oh, hi, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
So I was reading through your points. I did agree with you on some of them. I think that I'm a product of the city school district. I think that, you know, bringing people closer together in the community is a great idea. You brought up the idea of saving money on busing and stuff. But then you also, in your points, talk about welfare testing, testing of welfare people for drugs and stuff. And I think the research shows that that doesn't save money, that people typically, they find very low rates of use, and it ends up wasting money in the end. And then it brings up the idea of, like, anybody getting assistance. I got home assistance in purchasing my home here in the city. Shouldn't I then also be tested, since I'm getting these resources? So I just think that perhaps saving money is not going to happen in that idea.
It's not, and thanks for calling. It's not just a matter of saving money. It's a matter of saving lives. If you go to I'll give you a local store. I don't want to say a name. You can go there and you stand out there on the first of the month and people are trying to sell their EBT cards, food that should be going for the children, but it's going for drugs. If you go down to any of the stores on the first of the month or the middle of the month, they're buying lottery tickets. They're not putting it into their children, their family. So it's not just the money. And don't forget, if you're enabling someone to stay on drugs, well, when they don't get that check, when they don't have the EBT card to sell, then they might go out and commit crimes. Again, I'm not saying everyone. Don't go, you know, say that. But it does happen. So, yeah, I think I'm on a solid track here. And don't forget, 25 years of observing families, that's invaluable because most people don't have that kind of background.
All right, so before I get back to your phone calls, and I have a bunch, let's do some quick-hitting questions on the economy. The current mayor, Lovely Warren, just said yes to a performing arts center at Parcel 5. That was the decision. She says that is, combined with what Bob Morgan wants to do there with housing and kind of his development work, that's the best solution for a prime downtown parcel. Would you have made the same decision?
I would have to look at the details on that because, I mean, I know Arnie. He's a good man. He means well. I haven't seen his proposal, so I wouldn't want to comment on that. But I'm going to show you, just this is for Evan to see, and yeah. You guys can't. I had a position paper from 2009, and back then I said, I want a casino downtown and slots at the port. Not that I advocate for gambling, but as far as
you can't want a downtown casino and say you don't advocate for gambling, right?
No, but I'm not a gambler myself.
Okay.
What I'm trying to get across is that last number I saw that Midtown has cost about $180 million. That casino would have done the build-out on their money, not the taxpayers' money. And that's what I'm looking at. They wouldn't have had to give a building away for $2. They have, you got Parcel 5 is sitting there and nobody knows what to do with it, kind of like when they first filled in the inner loop. Shouldn't you have had a plan before you filled it in? You know, I mean, that's how I operate. If you're going to fill in an inner loop, my business plan would have been done. My request for proposals would have been there. I would have had everything all lined up before I filled it in. Let's not forget the Fast Ferry, High Falls, the Hyatt building sat there with just a metal skeleton for many, many years. We're subsidizing stadiums. I mean, at some point, you got to say, let's get together and think about something before you do it.
Tony Michiquet is the Republican running for the mayor of city of Rochester. And on another subject of development, Robert in Fairport has a question. Go ahead, Robert.
Yes, I'm interested to see what the candidate there thinks about this great and wonderful port we have that was built for $22 million. I think for 84 boat slips or something to that effect, and the newspaper made a big deal that 32 of the 54 seasonal boat slips are rented. So this is great shindig. I'm just kind of wondering what he thinks about this. My personal view is that we need to provide the taxpayers with a vote when government colludes to spend this much money on garbage like this. This is taxpayer money that never should have been spent on this.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I was there with Schlatt Strong when they were trying to put the hotel in. I wasn't for the hotel because they didn't secure financing, which means another thing that has to be subsidized by the city taxpayer. And I lived in Schlatt. I worked in Schlatt. I own property in Schlatt. I went to school in Schlatt. I'm there every day. And the most I've ever saw all last summer was 20 boats. And I was told about 8 of them were friends of our current mayor. So to me, that wasn't a success story. Will it play out and be later on? Possibly. I'm not against development. I think we have a natural resource that isn't being developed. But again, I would have a plan ahead of time. Not do it piecemeal.
All right, so here's two very different emails. Carl says, cheers for a candidate finally getting tough in the city of Rochester. Thank you, Tony. Valerie says, if putting a foot down and getting tough were the answers, it would have been done a long time ago. And as someone who worked for city schools for 30 years, Tony seems to have little understanding of the challenges of poverty and should do his homework. That's from Valerie. So let's talk about poverty. We've got this big anti-poverty initiative. What do you think the number one cause of poverty is in Rochester?
Poor choices by people. And the reason why I say that is if you're choosing to do drugs, if you're choosing to drink, you know, you're not focused on your education. You're not focused on job development, on gaining or acquiring more skills to put on the table for an employer. I see it all the time. And I could tell you, RPD sees it all the time, too. This is not imagination. You can go down Lyle Avenue and you see many people just standing around when they could be in school. In a lot of these programs, there's adult education. It's all free. It doesn't cost them anything. They can just go. There's employers that are fighting to get people, especially in like skilled trades, tool and die, things like that. And they can't get anybody that's qualified. So, I mean, you got to help yourself, too. You can't depend on government to do everything for you. As far as the poverty goes, it kills me when our current mayor says that she created 30,000 jobs, but the poverty went up every year. They create a poverty initiative, $6 million plus, and the poverty goes up. I tried to join that poverty initiative, and I was told, no, we don't need any Republicans on it.
They told you we don't need Republicans.
I did. That's exactly what I heard.
Who told you that?
One of the ladies that was running it, I can't say, but I will tell you, there's a business owner who owns three McDonald's, and he's a Republican, and he was told the same thing. So, I mean, when you exclude people because of their party or for any reason, that's wrong. If anybody knows poverty, it's me. I've gone to bed hungry. I've slept in cars. I wore torn shirts to school because I didn't have anything. So I think I would have had a lot to offer on poverty.
Down to our last couple minutes then, and then let's close for this on jobs then. If you are the mayor of the city of Rochester, you're going to want to see factories coming in or more companies. And I say factories. My mind is on Chattanooga, Tennessee, that talked about two new Volkswagen plants coming in the last couple of decades there. Rochester doesn't have that, but what is the kind of growth we can see? And in 2 minutes, how do we get there, Tony?
Well, first of all, you'd have to do regulatory reform. In this city, you need a permit to get a permit. It's just too difficult to do business here. Second, I like Jack Kemp's idea of Rochester Enterprise Zones. And what I would do there is if someone took an existing building and they brought it up to code, provided jobs, after a year of business, I'll refund all your permit fees back to you. I will help expedite zoning. And then I would not have a property tax for the first 2 years and then incrementally bring it up 50% the third year, 75% the fourth year until you're back on. I would have a content law. I would go to a Congress and fight for that. A content law means that if you're going to sell it here, you're going to make part of it here in the United States. Lastly, I'm the only one with 25 years in manufacturing at General Motors. I would be the best ambassador to go to Procter & Gamble, to General Motors, to Hyundai, down on Route 65 down in Alabama. Come bring some lines here. Give my people a chance. Let them show you what they can do. We'll make some product here and we'll create some jobs.
Do you see space here that a company like that, if they were serious about that and they called you back and you were the mayor, is there space here to bring them in and get them going?
Kodak Park is the first spot I would pick, but it isn't just that. There's I would want a lot of these buildings that are sitting empty on bus lines to be repurposed, and they can reset up assembly lines. I know I've done it. I used to set up assembly lines. I did supervision. I worked with skilled trades. I qualified equipment. So I know it can be done because I have the experience to do it.
All right, last question, sir. You said call me anytime. You'll come back anytime. If you're mayor, are you going to keep that same kind of guarantee?
As mayor, I would want to do a kind of like a fireside chat like FDR did, and I'll be glad to come here every week, every month, whatever you want to do.
You are the next FDR. I love it. Come back. I would love to set up monthly conversations with you, but I do hope to see you back here certainly before the election because there's a lot more to talk about. Other candidates for mayor have been here. We're going to have a series of conversations with them, so come back and we'll do more here.
It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you, Dawson.
Tony Michikay is the candidate for mayor from the Republican Party, and you can find a lot more on these specific proposals, tonyformayor.org. Thank you, Tony.